Good afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for the 60-second edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During this show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. And today, my guest is Edward Laboque. He is employed by the Portland Public Schools as a parent community specialist through the Multilingual and Multicultural Center. Edward holds a Bachelor's of Education from the University of Juba in South Sudan and a Master's of Science in Adult and Higher Education from USM and has 10 years of teaching experience in the elementary, middle, and high schools. Edward, his wife, and four children have lived in Portland since 2001. Edward, thank you for coming into the studio today, and welcome to New Mainers Speak.
Thank you for having me, Kate, and I'm very glad to have this opportunity to share some of my life and experiences in Sudan and transition to for coming to America, and then, of course, life in the United States for the last 15 years.
Wonderful. Today, we're going to be focusing on people who've been displaced from their homes and homelands, refugees and internally displaced persons. The UNHCR, that's the High Commission on Refugees, presently recognizes 15 million refugees of concern throughout the world who've been forced to flee because of their religion, nationality, membership in a particular social group or political opinion. Every minute, 8 people leave everything behind to escape war, persecution, or terror somewhere in the world. Edward, you have personal experience being a refugee, and I wonder what you can tell us about life as a refugee.
First of all, I would like to talk about my background. I was born on December 27, 1963, in what is now the capital city of South Sudan, Juba. And I should say, perhaps I was very unfortunate, born in a country that endured 50 years of conflicts. And South Sudan people started actually fighting for their rights since August 1955, before the independence of Sudan, and I was born like 11 years later, 8 years later, in the middle of this war. And most people flee then to East Africa, Uganda, and some to Kenya. And my parents initially also moved to Uganda, but then they came back in the middle of the war, where I was then born. And I went all through these years with no education, even if I was at the school age already, until 1972, when the first agreement was signed, you know, that brought back peace in Sudan. And the South stayed for another 10 years in peace. And that was the time I got a chance to go to school, although at all age. Again, 1983, war broke out. That continued until 2005. And although there was war, schools were there, so I continued to live in towns and continue with my school. That's why I managed to graduate from the University of Juba. And later I got married to my beautiful wife, Sabina Apollo, and with whom I live now with 4 children. And life, of course, have never been easy, as I mentioned earlier. Personally, I was persecuted on many occasions. First of all, I was a teacher in elementary school, and because of bad policy in 1989, when the current president of Sudan changed the educational policy that Arabic must be compulsory and Islamic religion must be introduced to all schools, students in Juba protested, and I was arrested allegedly for being behind the student protest. First of all, they picked the headmaster, and then later on they came. I was the school officer, somebody next to the assistant headmaster or assistant principal here. I was picked, and then I was tortured in order to reveal things that I don't even know. All I know was that the students were protesting because they didn't want policies, and there was nothing I could say more than what I know. But they insisted I was supporting the students. I was giving them venue for their organizing, and I was giving them a lot of moral support. I was giving them a strategy where to stage the protests and all this. But I kept myself the same in my statements, that I didn't know anything other than knowing that that the students are protesting against the policies. So my life started to, I started to feel like my life is being threatened. And I moved from Juba to Khartoum, where I thought I could be at peace. But again, in Juba, in Khartoum too, there was a bomb at an ammunition depot and a military barracks. And they started arresting randomly black people or South Sudanese people that probably they are agents of the SPLM, SPLA, the forces that were fighting the Khartoum government. And I was again picked, unfortunately, that because one of my friends was arrested, and two of my friends, one died, one survived, and I was also arrested for that. But because I was working for the church school too, the church really worked very hard to protect my life, and they also helped me to escape from Khartoum to Egypt. And those were lives threats against my life. And as an urban refugee, I was not a refugee per se, because I came with all necessary documents from Sudan. I came to Egypt, but I had to prove to the United Nations that I was a refugee, although I came with my passport and with all documents. I proved to them that I was a refugee because of life. My life was threatened, and I was arrested on a number of occasions, and I was tortured. A lot of things happened to me. So they granted me refugee status. And it took like 15 months in Egypt before I flew to JFK in New York, and on the 31st of January 2001. And I was in Portland on February 1st until today. Life as a refugee is not easy. It's really hard, because apart from threats on your life, you have to go to places that you don't know, you have no job, sometimes you have no language, and you have to depend on churches, if there are churches around that can help. You have to depend on some humanitarian organizations, if they are there, to give you some daily...
Can I clarify for one moment? When you were in Egypt, you're saying you were relying on the churches... support,
yes.
Is that right? Before you became a refugee, resettled in the U.S.
That's right.
Uh-huh.
It takes sometimes to prove to the U.N. that you are a refugee. And within that time, you have to find some ways of survival.
Were you in a camp, or were you more in the community?
Well, I was not. Most of us were not at the camp. Most of us who came from Egypt were not at the camp. We came as regular people, ordinary people coming to another country or traveling to visit Egypt. But then we report to the United Nations that we are refugees. But they don't take us immediately as refugees and begin to take care of us. But then they will say, okay, well, we give you this paper. We set up a date for you for us to interview you to find if you are really a refugee. And then we will grant you refugee status, and then we will begin to take care of you. But in the meantime, find out how you survive. And as I said, churches came in to help people, And also a lot of people have relatives today in the United States, in Canada, in Australia, some in Europe. Those early refugees who already had settled in those countries. Some of them helped us. For in my case, there was my sister-in-law was here with her husband, and I was very thankful also until I'm thankful to them for having really helped my family rent in Egypt and also have some food. But the churches played a lot of role because sometimes it is hard for them also to get money to send us there. So churches help us and some organizations. Humanitarian organizations like the IRC, International Rescue Team, and Caritas, and there are a lot of humanitarian organizations that help refugees over there. But we have to prove to the United Nations that we are refugees by passing the interview that they give us. Unlike some of us who went to Kenya, they were resettled in outside the city. They were far away in the outskirts or in rural areas, and they were settled in camps. And of course, still the UN have to work with resettling countries like the United States, Canada, Australia, to make sure they grant them resettlement status and then transport them. But because they are already refugees, as soon as they step out of their country because of the war and because of threats in their lives by war, they are immediately granted this refugee status, different from ours. We came like travelers with passports, we came with all necessary documents, so you have to settle yourself on your own, and then take care of yourself until the UN grants you the status of refugee.
So there are about 15 million refugees in the world right now, and I was really surprised to read on Catholic Charities' website that only 1% of people who are refugees get resettled. The U.S. is the number one place for people to get resettled to, along with Australia, Canada, Norway, and there's more growing resettlement in Europe as well. But since 2000, Maine has resettled 2,600 refugees from 24 countries. And so you came here to Portland, Maine, JFK, and then Portland, Maine. And what was on your mind as a refugee when you arrived here?
Well, I don't think I had a lot in my mind because I knew I will have no difficulties because I was educated, and I know what kind of job I can find here, any kind of job I can do to help my family because I have the language. But I was just wondering in my mind what could be life like for those who have no language. I was worried about those friends of mine with whom we came, and they didn't have language. And they were also interviewed through interpreters in Egypt. So I was just wondering what kind of life they will have here. But when we were being, when the orientation for coming here was taking place, I heard a lot of positive opportunities that it doesn't take the language. Even if it takes the language, but it's not really going to prevent them from work, because there are work that you can do with very little education, and it has proven true that it does happen, and I'm glad that we are doing that, and I'm glad also that with the communities around the city of Portland and Lewiston, two big cities in Maine who really settled most of the refugees, that they were very welcoming, and they supported the people. What I was wondering, though, was I read about snow in books, and I didn't know what snow was. But then we were told in the orientation that where you are going, if you are going to the northeast, you are going to in an area, or north or midwest, you are going to an area where there will be a lot of snow. So that could be something new for you people. So I was worried And I, at the same time, excited to see snow physically.
How do you feel about snow now?
I like it. I love actually winter than any other season. Some people love summer, but I love winter because it is. I just can't stand the heat because I came from a too hot country and I don't feel I should be in the heat anymore. The cold is nice for me.
I had a guest from South Sudan who said the same thing. He really loves winter.
Yeah.
It's unusual for my guests to love winter. I love that you do. You're listening to WMPG, Southern Maine Community Radio, broadcasting from USM. I'm Kate Manahan, and this is New Mainers Speak. If you're just joining us, welcome. My guest today is Edward Laboque, who is originally from South Sudan and is now a leader in Portland and is on the show today to highlight all that is happening to celebrate World Refugee Day as a member of that 30-person planning committee. World Refugee Day is an internationally recognized day established by the UN's General Assembly in 2001 to raise awareness about the troubling situations of 15 million people who are living around the globe, displaced by wars and persecution. And the official World Refugee Day is on June 20th every year. Edward, what is World Refugee Day all about in your own words?
Thank you again, Kate. I'm really excited to talk about World Refugee Day. And in fact, I heard about it and never, ever even celebrated it one day. But this year, I got very lucky, and maybe because of my new job at the Multilingual Center, and I'm very happy that the leader, the director of Multilingual, Grace Venezuela, gave me the opportunity to be in the planning committee. World Refugee Day is not something that is meant for refugee alone, because when the planning committee met for the first time, we made word cloud, hope, awareness, inclusiveness, honoring, community, came out as big words that should highlight the event. And with hope, I think people who became refugees lost hope in the first place. But given the second chance, as they are in their various countries, host nations, they get hope back again. So that's why I think hope became one of the biggest word in our planning, in the planning committee. Awareness is one of those words that came out as a big word because a lot of people are not aware of what life was like and what is this like for the refugees now. As I said before, hope was shattered, but now hope is coming back. And people have to be aware that those who are called refugees had those kind of hard life. But they're now doing some good job. They're regaining their hopes, and they're saving the community. They're giving back to the community as well. And that's why the word community also comes in. So honoring those hope, awareness, and honoring the resilience of the refugees is very important. And that's why inclusivity is one of those important words, because it has to include everybody. To understand what World Refugee Day is. So, as I said, I've never attended any one of those events, but I'm glad that I'm going to attend this one, and it is very extraordinarily different based on those who used to plan and has participated in them. In that, we're going to have, instead of just one day, June 20th, we, in recognition of our Muslim communities who are going to start their fasting on June, around the 18th of June.
For Ramadan.
Yeah, the Ramadan holidays fasting. We decided to launch it as a 1 week complete event, kicking off on June 13th. And for the first time, this time it's going to be at an outdoor event. It used to be indoor. At this point, it's going to be at Portland Deering Oaks on June 13th from 3 to 6.
I heard that there are going to be snacks from around the world made by local refugee restaurants.
Obviously.
Live music.
Yes.
Dance.
Mm-hmm.
And family-friendly activities.
That's right.
I honestly think that sounds like a fabulous time.
It is,
at Deering Oaks.
It is very exciting.
Next Saturday,
mm-hmm.
the 13th.
Yes. Very exciting. And I encourage all our listeners really, really to make effort to attend. It is at least the first day if they will not be coming for the next other events. Of course, a lot of all these dances, live music, some different activities are going to be performed by refugee and immigrants by themselves. So it is very exciting event. And then every attendee will have a water bottle with the word World Refugee Day on it. So, and it, above all, it is free. You'll have food, you'll have fun, and you'll have...
Entertainment.
So...
That's from 3 to 6 at Deering Oaks
next Saturday.
I think that sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
There's also a rain venue for that at 70 Forest Avenue in the YMCA. If the weather should not cooperate, the fun will continue.
That is exactly. Rain or shine, we are going to conduct it. And we are very grateful also for the YMCA. YMCA to offer us the venue. We initially thought of King Middle School to host it, but then when we went to the Y, we found that it's more spacious than King Middle. So we chose that.
So if someone were unavailable from 3 to 6 next Saturday, but they wanted to participate in World Refugee Day and the celebrations here in Portland this coming week, could you tell them a little bit about what else they could partake in?
They still have chances. If you can make it on Saturday, which is actually the most joyous and lively and more entertaining event, you will still have five more opportunities. On June 6th, June 16th, we have a diverse community of writers. Power of the Story, from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at East End School, 195 North Street in Portland. The following day, Wednesday, June 17th, trauma-sensitive yoga class for refugees and immigrants, from 4 to 5:30 at the YMCA, 70 Forest Avenue in Portland. And on June 18th, Think Global, Shop Local All Day, immigrant and refugee-owned businesses in Portland.
Is there a place where you can find out the list of those businesses?
I think on our
Facebook
page, you will find those, and then plus the address, of course, you will find them. And on the 19th, we have Art in Exodus, Refugee Artist Reception, 5 to 7 p.m., Mega, 624 Congress Street in Portland. And last, on the very day of World Refugee Day, on June 20th, Youth-Led Conversation, Diversity, Community, and Unity, 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. at the YMCA again, 70 Forest Avenue in Portland. So you can see that the whole week is full of very informative, very celebrative, and very entertaining events.
And quite a range of events. There's something there for everybody.
That's right.
If you heard something there but you didn't catch all the details, you can go to facebook.com/World Refugee Day Maine for more information.
Thank you, Kate, for adding that.
So will you be at most of these events?
I will try, although my schedule might not allow me. I'll try to be in most of them.
I wonder who you're hoping will come to the kickoff celebration.
It is free. All are welcome. Especially you, our listeners, right now, please, please, and please try your best to make it.
I have a hard time thinking of reasons to be inside this time of year. This is one of those opportunities where you can grab a friend, get out, enjoy some culture from around the world, and music, dance, food, and a joyous time at Deering Oaks from 3 to 6 p.m. next Saturday, the 13th.
Yeah.
Next Saturday, the 13th, Deering
That's
Oaks.
That's right.
World Refugee Day. Edward, you are a person who has adapted to very different situations throughout your life, and you continue to help others do the same. I think you are a model global citizen, and I thank you very much for your willingness to come on to New Mainers Speak today and share your experiences, as well as promote the upcoming events of World Refugee Day.
And thank you for this, for giving the opportunity for us, Kate Monahan.
It's a pleasure. I'm excited about this upcoming week, and I wanted to give special thanks to Bethany Edmonds, the coordinator of the American Friends Program from Catholic Charities of Maine, for introducing me to Edward for this interview. The American Friends Program is a way for Mainers, that would be listeners, if you are interested, to partner with resettled refugees who are starting their lives new as Mainers. Learn more about that program at ccmaine.org. I think that's a fabulous opportunity to get to know individuals from around the world and make a difference in their lives and their transition. I'm Kate Manahan in the studio with my guest, Edward Laboque. We will close today's program with a song he's chosen for us related to the lives of refugees. Edward, could you introduce this song to our listeners, please?
This is a song played using a locally made instrument like the xylophone, but it is locally made from local from wood strings and other things. So it is called Bedo Ikem. That means life in the camp. As I stated before, life in the camp is not easy. It's a very hard life. And the local people who are at the camp are singing and dancing in trying to restore what hope they have, even if they already lost hope, through their dancing, dances and songs.
What a great selection. So,
yeah.
Thank you.
Do that!